Great to have you back with us as we get ready for baseball here on this Sunday morning. And, you know, if it's Sunday morning, we bring in the professor, special assistant to the San Francisco Giants and former third base coach, and that is Ron Wotus. Whoa, how are you today?
I'm well, Marty. I'm well. And I have to say, it's nice to see the Giants off to a very nice road trip, a difficult one, I might add, going east and playing in those conditions. And they're doing well. So that's the way you want to start. I'm glad to see that.
Well, 6-3 on the trip. They've got a chance today to go 7-3 with Logan Webb on the hill. Well, and you know, it is a game of pitching, and they've got their guy on the hill today. He had trouble against the Mets, but I was going to ask you about that doubleheader because it was freezing. And it's so tough to play in conditions like that. And you saw it. What did you think of being out there for not only one game but two games in that kind of weather?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, the players are, you know, most of them are used to dealing with it. I mean, you're not used to it because you're coming right out of spring training. But it gets pretty cold in San Francisco at night as well. But the Latin players, they can't stand the cold. I mean, wherever I go, San Jose, Sacramento, or in the big leagues, and they're the ones that have a difficult time with it. And, you know, it's the same for both sides. They're certainly not used to it. The East Coast teams are used to playing in that weather. And it can be rough on a team, you know. And what's rougher usually is that first day game after the East Coast trip. You have that first day game after a night game. And you feel like you're playing at 8 in the morning. And that's a tough one to play as well.
Well, I'll tell you, you played some games at Candlestick, and I was thinking about you. I wanted to ask you this question. How did you stay warm at Candlestick? What did you do?
You didn't. You didn't stay warm. You asked the players that have been over there. And, you know, I was in there as a player on the visiting side. And the visiting side, as a player, is probably the most difficult place in the world to pinch hit because – you'd go out for the game, and you can't get to the clubhouse without walking across the field. And you'd be sitting down at the end of the bench, and it'd be that wind and cold and fog. And then the manager would point down at you and say, hey, get a bat. You're pinch hitting. You're hitting for the pitcher. And, you know, today they're hitting under the tunnel. They're hitting machines. They're comfortable. You had no place to warm up your hands. I don't even remember heaters in the dugout. You just went up there cold turkey and tried to put the bat on the ball. But as a coach, you know, or a player, you're playing in the game. It's much easier to handle. I think it's a lot more difficult to come off the bench. And for the fans and different people that are in the park to deal with that cold if you're not moving around and actually competing.
Well, I remember people used to put on heat, that H-E-E-T, Vaseline, all sorts of stuff to keep warm. One guy wore a rubber suit. I remember that.
Yep. Well, you're right, and I'm glad you brought that up because I rubbed myself down with baby oil at our ballpark the last few years, and some of the coaches make fun of me, but, you know, it helps. It closes the pores, and I got a couple guys here. We had some cold weather up in Sacramento, and I was telling them to do that, and a couple of them talked about it. They just came from Reno, and they tried the Vaseline, which works better than baby oil. You put Vaseline, you know, over you. It doesn't feel as well. I mean, that Vaseline's pretty thick, but it closes the pores and it keeps the warmth in.
Well, it's good for a pitcher to do it because then he just has to reach for the Vaseline and he's Gaylord Perry.
There you go. That's not a bad way to go.
You don't want to get caught today. That's the one thing.
That's for sure.
Baseball has changed. Hey, I was thinking about River Islands and things that we talk about. And I never asked you this, but as a kid, when you were in elementary school, did you walk to elementary school? Was it close by? For me, in Miami Beach, and even in Brooklyn, I walked to school. It wasn't too bad. But with River Islands, they've got the schools right there in the community, which is, I think, a great attraction for families with kids.
No doubt about it. And I didn't have to walk to school. I took the bus. But what I did do was walk home a lot because I was always at basketball or baseball or soccer practice. So I'd walk home. And then on the weekends, if I wanted to go up to the school to shoot around and shoot some baskets on the, you know, blacktop courts out there, not in the gym, I'd walk up with my basketball and I'd do so. I mean, that's a great advantage, as you talk about River Islands, you know, not only for the sports, but the outdoor activities for the adults. So it's so beautiful up there, and with this nice weather now coming in, it's a time to check out River Islands.
All right, I'm going to ask you this. Now, I was a Brooklyn kid, so we did go to the schoolyard, and we put a box on the wall with chalk, and that's how we played stickball, and you had to throw the ball into the box. Now, did you guys ever do that where you were in Connecticut?
I didn't play stickball, but I wore out the wiffle ball with my brother. We opened up the trunk of the car, and we put a big sheet over it, and it'd just be the two of us, and he'd pitch to me, and, you know, the ball would go into the trunk if you didn't hit it. And then when you hit the ball, you know, if you hit the road, it was a home run. If you hit the bush, it was a double, et cetera, et cetera. And the other thing that we love to do, Marty, kind of like your stickball, is we would take any type of rubber ball, like a, you know, not like a suit, even like a super ball, not that bouncy, and we throw it against the steps, and it would bounce onto the driveway, and then it would bounce onto the grass. And we invented games that way. To work on, we didn't do it to work on our field, and we did it to pass time, but I believe that it helped both of us become better fielders.
No, it's very good. We had it, we called it stoop ball, and you throw the ball at the step, because there may be six or seven steps leading up to the house, and you throw the ball at the step, and if you hit the point, it was like a home run, the ball would take off. But that's the way we, you know, I guess that's where I learned to catch and throw.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to do it yourself. It wasn't all kinds of organized sports like there are today. And, of course, you know, we didn't have, you know, the internet and the computers and the phones, right, Marty? So
yeah.
We had to keep ourselves busy, and it usually involved a basketball, a baseball, or a soccer ball for me.
Very good. Yeah, it's a good memory for me, and walking to school. So River Islands, you can walk to school. They're completing the high school, the third K through eight. So good things happening at River Islands. Ron Wotus is with us. Well, you've been up in Sacramento, and I know things have changed with the pitch clock up there. And it's a huge story because I can see it coming to MLB next year. What's your experience with the pitch clock? You like it? You don't like it? What do you think about it?
Well, I like it. As we said on previous shows, anything that speeds up the game, I think is good. There's, you know, there's a number of kinks that need to be worked out with it. And the first one for me, for instance, is, you know, the batter only having 5 seconds to get set and to address the pitcher with nobody on base. That happens awfully quick. I mean, if you step out at all or try to take a deep breath and gather your thoughts and get back in, that clock's going to beat you. So that's number one. But all in all, it's I like the clock. What I don't like is they link the two together with the clock. Is the pitcher can only throw over twice. If he throws over to pick off a runner a third time and he doesn't get him, it's a balk, excuse me, and the runner moves up. And that includes step-offs for the pitcher. So if the pitcher looks in to get his sign, and the sign that the pitcher and the catcher are not on the same page and he steps off, that's counted as a throwover. You know, so everybody it's so different for them to deal with this. But the clock itself, if they give them a little more time and keep the game moving, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about a pitcher being in a tough situation, and all of a sudden he's got to keep the clock in his view. You know, it's like a quarterback with the 30-second clock. You know, you got to snap the ball, and he's got to pitch a ball before the thing gets to zero, or else it's an automatic ball. So he's got to keep that in his vision. Is that a problem?
Well, it's a distraction. Wouldn't you think so? I mean, they got the clock off to the left-hand side of the batter, or, you know, behind the plate. They have it there. So the pitcher can see it, but you're exactly right. I was talking to one of the pitchers here a couple nights ago, and he wanted to hold the ball and throw over because that's a big part of what they do to control the running game. You know, if a pitcher comes set and uses the same cadence throwing home all the time, you know, a base stealer has an easier opportunity to time him up and steal. So, you know, he wanted to hold the ball a few seconds because that's the number one thing that makes it difficult for base dealers. They get antsy. If a young pitcher holds the ball or any pitcher for 3-4 seconds, that runner really gets locked up. Well, he was going to hold the ball, and he looked over. He saw the clock was at 2 seconds, and he had to throw the ball. Otherwise, it was going to be called a ball.
Yeah, no, I see the problem. Yeah, because you want to hold the stretch, and
right.
You know, and sort of get the timing of the runner off, and then all of a sudden the clock is winding down. So that's an interesting part too. Now, what do they do? Now, let's say a guy comes down for a rehab from the major leagues. He's a hitter. He's a pitcher. Does he have to deal with the clock because he doesn't deal with it in the big leagues?
That's a great question, Marty. And no, he does not. The Dodgers had a pitcher on rehab here, and the umpire came over to both dugouts and say the clock doesn't apply. So once the clock is gone, the throwovers don't count as well. They just play regular like Major League Baseball. So that was intriguing to me as well, because they want, you know, the major leaguer to be able to rehab like he would if he was in the big leagues. And that's where I think that the adjustment could have been made with this, is the AAA guys, I would have preferred to see them play the same rules as the major league guys. You could see how many players go up and down. We've already had a couple players help the major league club here from Sacramento and do a nice job. And so I would like to see the rules the same for AAA and Major Leagues, since there's so much movement throughout the season.
Well, you have you're in Sacramento, of course, working there. Lamont Wade is there. I guess you're going to have him on a rehab as well. He starts his rehab, should have started yesterday.
Yep, that's right, a few innings. And he's coming along. He looks fine running, but, you know, he needs those game at-bats. And I would imagine that we're not going to see him anytime soon, because he's been down quite a bit, and they want to make sure that he doesn't have any setbacks. So I'm sure he's going to, you know, he had a few innings, and then he'll probably have a day off, and they'll step up his progress just as if he was in spring training.
Boy, interesting. Isn't it interesting? Look what a different perspective you're getting from being, you know, in the major league level for so many years, coaching third, the action. And now you're coaching again, and you're getting to see guys at AAA, A-ball. Isn't it different?
It is different. And, you know, honestly, I'm enjoying it. I mean, I loved, you know, what I did coaching third and in the major leagues, and I missed the competition of the game. There's no doubt about it. But it's great being around the guys, getting to know them, you know, watching them develop and watching the, you know, these rules come into play, which Major League Baseball are doing. You know, I was in San Jose watching how it affected them. Now I'm here in Sacramento. And obviously, that's the way you change the rules in the major leagues. It's been going on for years. You start in the minor leagues, you get the players down here used to it, and then it's much easier to make those changes in the big league. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I think it's May 17th. May 17th, the robot umpire is going to be here in Sacramento.
Right, that's right.
So, you know, when the hitters get called out on a bad pitch and they come back to the dugout, they're yelling out, "Can't wait for May 17th.
I love it. Very, very good. Very good. Hey, a couple of things happened during the week that I definitely wanted to talk to you about. One, Craw, there's a safety squeeze. He was on third, and I think it was Estrada perhaps at the plate, a safety
yep.
squeeze. You run through the safety squeeze again. How do you read that? Because I know Craw has to come down the line as fast as he can, but it's not a suicide squeeze where you're just taking off. What happens on the safety squeeze?
Well, on a safety squeeze, it's similar to a contact play. If you look at it similar to the complex contact play that we've talked about, for whether it's a man on third or first and third, and a lot of teams like to do it with a man on first and third to safety squeeze, because you get one run in, and then the guy in first moves up to second, and you got a chance to drive him in with a base hit. But the idea of it is that the batter doesn't square around until the last moment, and he's pushing the ball most of the time towards the first baseman. That's why it's like they like doing it with a man on first, because the first baseman has to hold mm-hmm. the runner on, and
okay.
he can't vacate. And, you know, the element of surprise. So, you know, if he's a fast first baseman and he can close in there real quick, he's got a shot at getting the guy at home plate, just like on a contact play when a ground ball is hit right out of fielder. So the runner, it's very important for him to get as big as lead as he possibly can. And, you know, where the third baseman is playing allows him to do that. If he's playing off the line, the guy can get more. So there's some elements to it. that can be difficult. A third baseman standing right by third, you can't get a good jump at third base. Even if it's a good bunt, they still have a chance to throw you out. So you don't always do it with speed with a man on third. I mean, an average runner is fine. If you execute it properly and the guy in third gets a good lead and then he anticipates the bunt, he doesn't read it. And as soon as he sees that ball down, whether it's hard or soft, he's going, just like a contact play. He's not going to read the bunt. And if he gets thrown out, so be it. And that's why you do it with one out. If there was no outs and you tried to safety squeeze, you'd want the runner to read the play and not run into that first out at home. So that's why I say it's like the contact play. You do with one out. And you push the envelope and try to get that run in with the safety squeeze.
We don't see it that much in the major leagues anymore, though.
No, we don't. And, you know, years ago, it was the suicide squeeze that everybody did. Remember the year Tony La Russa, they were putting every time he did a suicide squeeze, they put the number on the board. I think he had, I don't know how many he had. He may have had 20 or 30 in a season, and it was a big weapon for him. And part of the reason we're not going to see it a lot anymore is the pitchers aren't hitting. And that was a very popular play with the pitchers hitting, because a pitcher could square around like he's going to go ahead and sacrifice the guy from first to second, and then you can turn it into a safety squeeze at the same time. So anyways, you're right. We're probably not going to see it a whole lot, but it's a good play to utilize if you think the guy's a good bunter and you have the right guy at third, and you think it's a better play than letting him hit because he might strike out.
Talking ball with the professor on a Sunday morning, always a lot of fun. Runners on third. Okay, there was a play in the Met game where Marte was on third, and he ended up scoring on a very short pass ball, wild pitch, whatever it was. Bart couldn't control it, and Marte took off, and he scored. And the commentator said, well, the pitcher was in the windup, and the third baseman wasn't that close to Marte. So it gave him a big lead off third. And then my question was, does a pitcher have to declare if he's in a windup or a stretch when the runner's on third?
Yeah, he does, Marty. That's a new rule that was implemented a few years back. If you remember last season, Quintana got called for that he didn't declare that he was going to be in the windup. And what happened to him, which explains the rule, is, you know, there was a runner on base, a runner on first. He's been in the stretch. Then the runner got to second. Then all of a sudden the runner gets to third base. Now, if he stayed in the stretch, it wouldn't be a big deal because he's continuing in the stretch. But if he goes to the windup, he's got to let the umpire know, hey, I'm going from the windup now. So the umpire knows whether he's going to come to a stop in a set position. And, of course, in a windup, you do not have to do so. Right. And the reason this rule was put in is if you think of the pitchers years ago and you think of Juan Marichal and all the guys that put their hands over their head and, you know, they had the arms swaying and the hands go over their head, that was the true windup. Well, in today's game, you have a lot of guys in the windup. They start sideways as if they're in the stretch. And then they put their foot back to the side instead of going backwards, and they go into a windup from there. So because so many pitchers are having different windups in positions on the rubber, you have to declare now whether you're going to go from the stretch or the windup when there's a runner on third.
Very good. I didn't know that. So the pitcher, what, he just tells the umpire what the deal is, and that's it?
Yep. He looks at him and says, hey, you know, I'm going to be in the stretch. Hey, I'm going to be in the windup. And, you know, we ask our catchers to remind the pitchers because, like, when Connor got called for it, you know, I mean, my goodness, you got other things on your mind. And it's a newer rule, and he had never been involved with it. And even though he was probably told at some point in time, you know what happens when you get in a big league game and you're competing. You know, it's something that's easily to be forgotten. So the players here, it happens in the minor leagues as well. You know, they shouldn't mess that up anymore because it's been around for a few years.
Boy, the Giants are bunting the ball more. Yesterday, Gonzalez had a bunt hit. Yastrzemski had a bunt hit. Estrada, of course, stole a base, but we've seen him bunt. And, well, I've said this for a couple of years. You and I have talked about it. I'm looking down at third base, and I'm seeing the third baseman playing shortstop. There's no one with 150 feet of that side. And I say to myself, why don't people bunt? And now the Giants all of a sudden doing it more than any other team.
Well, I agree with you so much, Marty. It's so good to see. And you know how I feel about it. I always looked at it, especially when I was a minor league manager, and I still feel this way to some degree. If you're losing a game and you need base runners and the guy's giving you the bunt and you're up there swinging away, I personally think you're playing for your own stats. You're not playing to win. If you're playing to win the game and you can bunt and you're good at it, you drop the bunt down. It's a base hit. And I'm so happy that Cap has been a big proponent of this, and he's messaged this to the players for the 3 years now I've been around them. We want to take the bunt when it's available. And you could see what it does to a team. It's demoralizing. It takes, it keeps the third baseman in. It keeps them out of the shift. It keeps the line moving. And I think we sit in there as players and we don't bunt. We think we're going to hit a homer or a double. Well, you need a base runner. You're down 3-1. Bring the tie and run to the plate, or you're down by four. So it's a good play any time in the game. But, you know, as you know, Marty, players don't get paid for bunt hits. They get paid for damage.
No, and it's a good way to start a rally, which is what the Giants have done. They've started rallies with it. Now, let's talk about counts and bunting, because Dubon bunted with two strikes, and who knows if he realized it, didn't realize it. I guess that doesn't matter. But what's the best count? Can you bunt 0-1, you know, as an element of surprise, or do you have to just take that bunt on the first pitch and just try to lay it down? If you don't, then you're swinging away. So how do you look at it?
I think the mentality today is changing than the way it was years ago, because years ago, you didn't want to bunt 0-1. Say you tried to bunt base hit and you fouled the thing off, or or you took the strike, it was on the outside corner. You know, no manager or hitting coach wanted you to try to bunt 0-1, because if you don't get the bunt down, now you're 0-2 and you are really in a hole in that at bat. You know, so in today's game, I think it's changed quite a bit, but if you watch the defenses still, after a batter gets one strike, there's many guys that the defense shifts on. They won't shift. They'll keep that third baseman there up until one strike, and then they'll go into the shift because they don't think he's going to bunt with one strike. Well, of course, we know the Giants will. We've seen Belt do it on a 3-0 count one time. Yeah. But the point is, the game has changed, the thinking of it. I've heard people been encouraged to bunt 0-1. But if you're a good bunter and you can get it down, it's a great time to do it. Because let's say you're not in a shift and you're a right-handed hitter and the third baseman's up playing the bunt. You get a strike on you, then he goes deep. They all go deep to their position. If you're a good bunter, drop it down. He's way back. It's a base hit. All you have to do is get it fair or foul, and you have yourself a base hit.
I think it's a great weapon, and we're seeing the Giants do it, and it's working for them, and it started a couple of rallies, so it was nice. Talking with Ron Wotus on this Sunday morning, we love talking ball. Hey, yesterday, Miguel Cabrera finally got hit number 3,000, Woe, and, you know, you've seen him, of course, with Detroit and the World Series, the Giants and Tigers, but what about Miguel Cabrera? You've seen just, I guess, his whole career pretty much when he came up with the Marlins in the early 2000s. Give us a comment there, too, on Cabrera.
Well, he's always been one of those guys. Anytime you had a meeting going over the other team, you know, you look at the lineup and you say, you know, who's hot or who's the hitter you don't want to beat you. And I've heard his name as much as I've heard any opponent that we played against, because he's that type of hitter. I mean, he hits for power and he hits, you know, base hits when he needs them. I think his 3,000th hit was through the right side, a ground ball through the right side. And I think if you use the whole field like he does, it's not an accident that he has 3,000 hits. He's just a tremendous hitter. And you look at all the hitters on that list that have 3,000 hits, and he fits right in there with them. A consummate professional, and he's a tough out. He's just not a power guy, but he's a tough out, and he's willing to take the ball the other way and get the base hit to drive in a run. And those guys are extremely hard to pitch to.
I'm sure in his quiet moments he sees Romo on the hill, and he says, how could I not hit that?
You know what? He was looking for the cat, and he got the dog. and we won the World Series. And that is, thank God, because he scared the heck out of me at the plate, and he took that fastball right down the middle. What a great moment for the Romo and the San Francisco Giants.
We'll never forget it. This guy could have 6,000 hits, and this that'll be the image that comes back. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. That's something, and I'm glad to see him get his 3,000th hit, because even if, as a young kid, you said, this guy is going to be good, his whole approach at the plate and what he could do, and, you know, the longevity, and that's what I respect about him and everybody else on that list. He just didn't do it for one or two or 3 years. You have to have some real longevity to do it, and, of course, the DH has helped him out being in the American League to be able to do that, but, you know, he's still – could play first base as he did. He slowed down now, but he was a darn good third baseman when he first came up.
That's right. That's right. I remember that. Orrin Freeman, longtime scout for the Marlins, raved about Cabrera. I love Orrin Freeman. He passed away, but raved about Cabrera when he was in the minor leagues for Miami. He talked about him all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about this as we wrap it up. It's you and I could talk forever here. Opening day for the Nationals. They did a flyover and had a guy parachute in. They just didn't tell the FAA or whoever else was involved, and they didn't tell the Capitol Police. And when the plane started coming over the Capitol, they thought maybe it was a terrorist, and they were ready to scramble the missiles. But it was a guy coming into the ballpark on a parachute. So my question to you is, you've been through so many opening days in the minor leagues and major leagues. Crazy stuff happens on opening day.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've never heard anything like that. We need to get Nancy Pelosi and Leon Pineda in there to explain all the mechanics of that one, because what a story that is. As far as my opening days, you know, I think the one that stands out more than anything, it was a great day to be back at the ballpark. It was after we won our World Series, and here you go, we have the Cowboy. You know, Madison Bumgarner on a horse bringing the World Series flag out to right center field to raise it. And that was special. I think we all got a smile on our face when we saw Bum get on that horse and ride out to center field.
Yeah, remember when they had you walk in from center field like the Field of Dreams? How about that?
That was odd as well. I remember we were standing out there in the, what is it, the garden, right? You know, looking at the lettuce and everything else. And,
the kale.
We were looking with the kale. There you go. Hunter loved the kale, so he liked being out there. We were looking at each other, and we go, you can believe we're standing here? Then they open the gates, and here we come walking in. That felt strange, but that was a unique moment, no question about it, and a great way to present the team on the field, because it was different, right? And unique, and that was well done as well.
Boy, what fun. Well, have a great Sunday and next weekend back at the ballpark, and the Nationals will be here again. Good for the Giants to get another few games with them. I think they're handling them pretty well. So have a great week. Have a good day today, and we'll talk next week. Look forward to it.
All right, Marty, we'll see you next week with the hot dog buns and the rutabaga, okay?
You got it. You got it. The okay. Best part of Sunday. All right, take care, Will. All right.
You too, Marty. Bye-bye.
All right, more coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5. That's the professor. More coming up on the Sports Leader.